Hi, this is Pastor and Bible teacher Warren Hoyt, welcoming you to another audio message of the Word of God, which, according to Acts 20:32, is able to build you up and give you an inheritance among God's people. When you're a preacher, it's kind of a mystery how you get messages from God. You know, you have to preach every week, so you're seeking God all the time. You're kind of on search mode, seeking for God's message. And this message that I'm going to speak to you today kind of came to me out of the blue, and I was thinking about it later in the week. Where did this come from? What was I thinking when I got this? I don't really even know, and that's kind of different for me. But it really has kind of intrigued me, the message. So I want to share with you a message today which I've titled Other Gods. And it's based on the scripture in Exodus 20, where the first commandment of the Ten Commandments was, you shall have no other gods before me. And then in Matthew 22, 35 through 38, Jesus kind of changed the wording of that commandment. When somebody asked him, what's the greatest commandment? He said, it was to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so that intrigued me because it shows, you know, an insight. It really opens up some insight into what it means to have a God. You know, you shall have no other gods. Jesus said to have no other gods meant you loved the true God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And that's just intriguing to me because it shows that having a God is like having a husband or a wife. You can't have more than one. We're supposed to be one man and one woman, right? Because you can't really love more than one. It's just the way we're made. And so a God is what you love supremely. It's what you worship, you know, what you attribute worth to. It's what you dedicate yourself to and what you're fully committed to, just like a spouse. You're supposed to be fully committed to your spouse. And so loving God supremely is the same as not having other gods. Now, we understand what other gods were in ancient times, right? Israel, they lived in Egypt for over 400 years, and the Egyptians worshipped all kind of gods, Osiris, Ra, many other gods. They even had golden calf gods, by the way. Then when Israel came out of Egypt and entered into Canaan, well, all the people around there also worshipped gods. They worshipped Baal, Ashtoreth, Chemosh, or Molech. We know that the Greek people had a whole pantheon of gods. The Romans took those and changed their names, but they still were a whole pantheon of gods. The Norse people had Thor and Odin. The Aztecs and the Mayans, they had their gods. Every people on earth has always had different gods. Yet, it seems like, if you look into it, that their thoughts about them were pretty similar because, you know, they thought that the gods were in charge of different things, like they were in charge of the weather or maternity, or they were in charge of the sea or the land or whatever. And you had to please these gods because if you didn't, they might punish you. They were kind of capricious. They might cause you to have a miscarriage, or they might send bad luck or an earthquake or a storm. So everybody knew they had to serve the gods in some way. They had to make sacrifices to them or give them something. And as I said, the gods were also the explanation for the world. It's kind of like what made the world work, right? They created it. They controlled it. So the gods were kind of like how you understood life and the universe and so forth and what was important, what you lived for, and what you oriented your life around. A person's God was whatever they most highly valued. It's what they centered their lives around. I mentioned the Aztecs, well, the Olmecs before them, then the Aztecs and the Mayas, they all had a corn god because corn was their main crop. It's what they depended on for life. So they had a corn god. In Habakkuk 1:16, he mentions a fishing people and kind of sarcastically says that they worship their nets, because the nets brought them a living, right? You're a fisherman, you use your net to make a living, so they end up worshiping the net. And we know that ancient warriors used to worship their weapons sometimes. They'd kiss their swords or whatever. Some men worshiped their strength, or they worshiped intelligence. Others worshiped wealth or power or their job or their trade. And the truth is, every group of people in all of history and still to this day has had and always has had its gods. And so that just reveals that human beings have some sort of deep-seated urge to worship something, to devote themselves to something. You know, they need a cause bigger than themselves or something. And there's basically no exceptions. There's always been a few atheists in every generation, but they've always been a minority. And when you look into it more deeply, you discover that even those so-called atheists, though they don't worship gods like the other people do, they still have these things that they supremely value. Today, of course, we're far more sophisticated. We know that gods don't cause sickness. Bacteria does, virus does, right? We know that there's natural explanations for earthquakes, tsunamis, or hurricanes. They don't happen because the gods are punishing us. Lightning bolts aren't the gods' arrows. We don't believe angels are pushing the planets around in their orbits. Did you know that even Isaac Newton believed that? That angels pushed the planets around their orbits. Or we don't believe that demons cause mental problems or epileptic seizures. I mean, some do, but most of us, we don't. Modern people don't think that gods are the explanation for everything. We basically don't believe they can help us or hurt us. And yet, as I say, the interesting thing is that with all our modern sophistication and science and technology, deep down we're actually not as different from ancient people as we may think. It turns out we still have things that we look to just as the ancients look to their gods. We just don't call them gods. And we still worship things. We just don't realize that's what we're doing. Because after all, you know, what is a god anyway? It's what people thought controlled the world. It's what could give them fulfillment. It's what could meet their needs in life. It's what could protect them from bad luck or from bad things happening. It's what gave you favor so that you could get what you wanted in life. So when you think of it that way, hey, I think it's pretty obvious. People today still worship. They still have things they look to give them meaning in life, to meet their needs. Now, surveys show that most people in our culture today still believe there's a supreme being. They actually do. A large percentage of people say there is a supreme being. But I think we'd all admit that if you really observe how people live, they don't worship or serve that being in any kind of meaningful sense, do they? I mean, they don't center their lives around him by any means. And the reason is, a lot of people just don't really think God does much of anything. You know, he might be there, but you can't count on him. Some people would even say, that's just for the weak-minded. You know, they may not say it openly because they'll be scorned, but they really believe it. Only the weak-minded believe in God or, you know, look to him for everything in life. Intelligent and educated people today, many of them, really think science, or you could say human reason, is the only real source of truth. You can't get truth from religion, from revelation. You have to get it from science, from human reason and thinking. And actually, a large percentage of young people admit that they turned away from belief in God or from, you know, seeking God or from going to church and so forth, because they really think that science kind of explained them away. Science has told us where the universe came from, where life came from. It all happened by accident, you know, the Big Bang, evolution. There's no God behind it. We figured it out, so we don't need to even think about him anymore. And basically, what that amounts to is that we really only trust in ourselves. That's what we, most of us, really believe. We decide what's important in life. We decide what gives meaning or fulfillment. It's just really up to us. And so the bottom line is, a lot of people, though they would never call these things gods, they actually find things that fulfill the purpose of a god. They find their things to worship. And basically every individual and every group has these. You know, like I say, some intelligent and educated people kind of worship their intelligence and look to that more than anything else. They think that, you know, by human reason, by our science and so forth, that's how we're going to build a better world. Atheist Sam Harris, you know, one of the new atheists, he said as much. We can make a better world if we just get rid of religion and pay attention to human reason, to common sense. We can make a better world. We can do it. And in a more extreme sort of a version of this, there's this Israeli author who wrote a book recently called Homo Deus. And in that book, he theorizes that with science and technology, we're going to eventually be able to kind of meld man with machines, with computers. We're going to learn how to upload our minds and our consciences into robots. So, man, that's like an extreme view of this. But the idea is, you know, man is God. And man is going to make a better world. And so some people kind of worship their intelligence. They worship human reason. It's kind of sad, though, because you can see plenty of examples where very intelligent people did really stupid, sinful, shameful things. Remember a few years back when that female astronaut traveled across the whole country wearing Pampers, wearing, you know, adult diapers, so she could murder her boyfriend's lover? I mean, here's a brilliant woman. You talk about intelligent. But she did something so stupid as that, so terrible. You know, intelligence doesn't change your heart. Solomon was the wisest man who ever lived, but he found that his great wisdom was just like a mist, you know? It was vanity. It was frustration. And that's why Paul says that there are people who proclaim themselves to be wise but become fools in Romans 1:22. And Job says that God catches the wise in their craftiness. Job 5:13, and Paul quotes that in 1 Corinthians 3:19. God catches the wise in their craftiness. He kind of makes fools out of the wisest people. So wisdom is sort of a god. Well, for other people, it's not that. It's not wisdom. It's just their god is really finding pleasure and avoiding pain. Their philosophy is, you know, work as little as you can, party as much as you can, just live for pleasure, just avoid pain. That's really, I think, a lot of people's god. That's what they live for. Their god is their belly, right? They live for sexual pleasure, or they live for the next party, or for the pleasure of alcohol or drugs. Many men live just to score with as many women as they can. And many women, just their whole thing is to be loved, to be attractive, to have men desire them. And they feel like that will make life meaningful and happy. And, you know, there's just multitudes of people who have these sorts of gods. But it's sad because we've all heard, I know I have heard tons of stories, testimonies of people who kind of live for those kind of gods. And they'll tell you time and again how those things just led to disappointment and disillusionment. Those who try to work hard to avoid work, they just are looking for pleasure. They end up not having anything meaningful that they're pursuing in life, and they end up poor, really. Those who live for alcohol or drugs, you know, they find out that in the end, those things enslave them, ruin their health, take away their mental capacity, shorten their lives. The pleasure of it doesn't last, but the negative effects do. And I've heard really quite a few testimonies of men who just chase women all the time. And in the end, instead of that really fulfilling them, they ended up feeling more lonely. They ended up finding that sex satisfied them less and less. So it just didn't work. And they ended up to where they couldn't even bond with anyone. And women who worship beauty or attractiveness end up losing it all eventually, no matter how much they spend on Botox or surgeries. And really, even the beautiful ones often say their beauty is like a curse because men are constantly, you know, gawking at them and harassing them and treating them like objects. So that doesn't make them happy. And then the ones who can't be as beautiful as they'd like, they end up feeling so sad and disillusioned and resentful and worthless and so forth because they don't have the beauty. Oh, there's no shortage of gods today, though. You know, no shortage at all. Some people worship their jobs, their careers. They're not They're not lazy like the people just seeking pleasure that I just mentioned. No, they're the opposite. They're workaholics. They want to reach the top of their field, or they want to be millionaires. But, you know, many are the stories of the frustration of that kind of a God, too. People reach the top and they find they're not satisfied, or they don't reach the top and they find that they're not satisfied. It's interesting, or ironic, I guess, really, that there's actually some people who sought to work so hard because they said, you know, when I was young, our family didn't have anything, so I'm not going to let that happen to my family. I'm going to work super hard and make sure my family has all they need. And they work and they work and they work, and it ends up to where they lose the very thing they're trying to please, their family, because they're never home. They're always working. It's very sad. Some people focus on physical fitness, you know. They work in the gym, and it's always about working out and diet and all that stuff. And I knew a couple where the man died at 43. They were health nuts. You couldn't even find a cookie in their house because they didn't eat anything with sugar in it. They were super healthy. And yet, he died at 43. Nothing, you know, stops the diseases that kill us, or the old age that overwhelms us eventually. There's no fighting it. We know a lot of people worship money, or they worship material things. I thought it was interesting. J. Paul Getty, one of the richest men in American history, shortly before his death, somebody interviewed him and asked him, is there anything you'd really like to have before you die? And you know what he said? He said, I'd like to make one more dollar. The guy was a multimillionaire, and all he could think about was making one more dollar. Many a person has gone after money, you know, and made it their God. And it's not just the rich. There's a lot of poor people who think money would make them happy, and they'll do anything for money. There's people who would sell their soul for money, you know. They'll trample on their grandmother to get money. And yet, sometimes money or possessions, when people get them, they find out it doesn't bring them happiness. It doesn't bring you love. You know, can't buy me love. That's what the Beatles said, right? Instead, it causes them just to be overwhelmed with worries and cares. And that's why Jesus said that the worries and the cares of life choke the word from people's hearts and keep them from producing any good fruit. Paul said the love of money was the root of all sorts of evil, and many seeking after it wholeheartedly have fallen into traps and ruined their lives. And he says they've pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So, you know, money is a god. Then there's those who worship power, physical power or power over people. Some people like to just be in charge, you know, because it makes them more secure. It makes them feel worthwhile if they have power over other people. The problem with that kind of a God seeking power like that is that if you're always seeking power, you know what? There's always other people also seeking it. And so they're going to always be a threat to you. They're always competing against you. And so the power you seek ends up making you miserable. King Herod's a great example of that. He was the king, but he was always fearful and paranoid that other people were going to take his power. Another God along that line, I would say, is government. I read where, you know, the scholastics and all in the Middle Ages were great philosophers. And they were Christians, most of them. And they devoted their study of philosophy and all to things like proving the reality of God, the existence of God, understanding the best way to live, and so forth. But over the years, the pursuit of philosophy kind of evolved, and it went into where they kind of thought the best thing to do would be to devote our thinking to ideas of government. That's what we need. If we could just devote our minds and our intellects to developing better forms of government, then mankind could solve his problems and end up being happy. If you look into it, that's kind of sort of the root of the French Revolution and the Enlightenment in Europe. A lot of those people were into that sort of thing. You had Rousseau and Voltaire and Montesquieu focusing on ideas of government. Some of our American founding fathers went to France and loved France and got a lot of their ideas from French thinkers. The idea that government would solve humanity's problems. If you could just have the right government, we'd be happy. I think that a lot of us Christians in the U.S. have often, I include myself in that, we've often looked too much to government. We thought if we could get the right president into office, that would make a better country. Sometime back, before Obama was elected, the black community, many of them kind of thought if they could get a black president, their lives would improve. But, you know, it didn't really work. A black president couldn't change the black crime rate, the murder rate in Chicago, the rate of illegitimate births, you know, single-parent families. Government, as important as it is, it just can't change the nature of human beings. It can't satisfy the longings of our hearts. It's just another human thing. It's imperfect like we all are. It doesn't change hearts. It doesn't bring lasting peace. It can be good or bad, and government's good. Government's important, right? But it doesn't serve very well as a god. And that's the thing about idolatry, if you think about it. Most of these things I've mentioned, they're good things, right? Sex is a good thing. It's a gift of God. Money is an important thing. We need it. We use it. Authority or power or government, these are good things. Security in your life is a good thing. Family is important. It's wonderful. The problem is if we look to any of these things to kind of take the place of God, if we begin to look to them for fulfillment, for happiness, if they become the most important thing in our lives, things start going wrong very quickly. Now, why is that? Well, it's something to really ponder, but I think I know a few reasons why it is. The first one is just simply this. We were created by God and for God. And so it's only if God's in the center that we find our lives in correct order. I kind of compare it to the way the planets revolve around the sun. That's the right order. We revolve around the sun. The sun doesn't revolve around us. And the planets can't just say, you know what, I'm going to leave here. I'm going to wander off somewhere. What would they experience? They'd go out into darkness. They wouldn't have the warmth or the light of the sun. And it's like that with God. God made us. And so we are to focus and center on Him. When we love Him supremely, that orients us the right way so that we achieve the maximum benefit in life. Any other kind of thing that we put there in the center is puts us into disorder. Loving and worshiping God causes all other areas of life to come into the right place. You know, if you love God first, you can enjoy and use other things like money, sex, family, work, pleasure. There'll be something you can enjoy, something you actually thank God for. But they're not the most important thing. They're not what you worship. They're not what you can't do without. If God's first, you can use these things without them using or controlling you. And you will find fulfillment in God and enjoy other things, but you won't look to them for fulfillment or to feel important or feel worthwhile in life. And so having no other gods but the true God ends up keeping us free from all sorts of bondages and enslavements. If I only look to Him for my fulfillment in life, then other things can come and go. God remains constant. So that's why we must have no other gods. He made us, and He is to be the only God. He's the only one who can fulfill our needs. And you know, if you look into church history, you'll see a lot of great leaders of the church, like Augustine, Luther, Calvin, have said over the years that idolatry is the root of all other sins. And that's an important thing to recognize. That's why it's the first commandment, you shall have no other gods. Because if it's, you know, Jesus said everything else depends on that and loving your neighbor as yourself. Because if we have that right, we're not going to commit the other offenses. We're not going to break the other commandments. All other sins we might commit are the result, really, of not loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. They're the result of us looking to something else instead of God. You know, why do we fail to love people? Why do we fail to keep promises? Why do we live selfishly? Isn't it because deep down, there's something we think we have to be happy, something that's more important to us than God Himself? I mean, think about lying, for example. We wouldn't lie. Nobody would lie if they hadn't first made something else more important and valuable in their hearts than God. For example, that something else could be human approval. You lie because you want the person to like you, to approve of you. Or reputation, or power over others, or financial advantage. I was recalling how early on in my days as a Christian, when I was a painting contractor, One time I was trying to get a job painting a great big church, and the pastor himself asked me, have you painted big buildings like this before? And before I even thought about it, I lied. Oh yeah, I said. Why did I do it? Because I wanted the job. I wanted the money. Later, I was just so smitten by my conscience. I felt terrible. Fortunately, we did the job and did all right, and God didn't bring a punishment on me. He just brought that conviction to me. But the reason I lied was for financial advantage. I was making the job and the money the most important thing in my life instead of pleasing God. So it's really true. All other commandments hang on this first one, and of course the one to love neighbor as self. No other person or thing that we might see as a God can ever do for us what God can. Some of these things, you know, they look glittery and pretty and attractive to us, and they seem to offer us what we want, you know, pleasure, protection, joy, power, whatever it might be. But those other things, if we look to them for ultimate satisfaction, they always come with strings attached, you know, some kind of negative consequence we didn't really foresee or want. God's the only one we can truly love with all of our heart and truly give all our commitment to where it doesn't do us any harm. Instead, it brings about the greatest good. We can love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. He'll never disillusion. He'll never let us down. It will always be for our good. And so, you know, idols, other gods, they're not just something ancient people had. They're as present today as they ever were. It's an ever-present temptation and attraction for all of us to put something else or to let something else get in to God's place, to get into our lives and become like the central thing. That's why I think it's pretty interesting that the Apostle John ended his first epistle, the letter he wrote to Christians, by the way, not pagans, by saying, little children, keep yourselves from idols. 1 John 5:21. He wrote that to Christians precisely because idolatry is or can be a problem for any one of us. I love what Jeremiah 9:23-24 says. Jeremiah says, let not the wise man boast of his wisdom, or the strong man boast of his strength, or the rich man boast of his riches. In other words, don't let wisdom, strength, riches become the most important things to you. Don't let them become your gods. But instead, he says, let him who boasts boast about this, that he understands and knows me, that I'm the Lord. And so God must be first. We must have no other gods. And we're to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. So as I conclude, let me just ask you a question. And it's the same question I ask myself as I was preparing this message. What is God in your life? What's God in my life? Who do we look to? What do we look to for meaning, for purpose, for fulfillment? What do we center our lives around? What do we sacrifice for? It's a good question to ask, you know. It might be hard to deal with. It's hard to discern if there's any other gods. But the greatest command of all is to have no others but the true one, and to love him more than anything or anyone else, including ourselves. So as I conclude, I just pray, may the Lord deliver us all from idols and help us put him first above all else. Till the next time, may the Lord bless you.
Thanks for listening today. If you have any comments, questions, or prayer requests, I'd be happy to receive them from you. Just scroll down and you can send them from the website directly. Also, if you'd like to support this ministry, you can do it on the website by clicking the donate button or contact me to make a different arrangement. Thank you.